You are tuned in to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew. Today's guest is Thawna Autham cultural teacher, utilitarian potter, artisan jewelry maker, retired thoka player, and comedian, Charissa Juiwa.
Hello, and skook dash and hootenik and everything. My name is Charissa Juiwa, and I am a citizen of the Thawna Autham Nation. My home is Covered Wells, which is basically in the middle of the reservation in the Bu'aji district. Our nation is divided into 11 districts, and that's one of them. I live in cells, which is called Gomchgut Uwausik, which means where the turtle is wedged. I've lived here for most of my adult life. Anyway, I just I have two grown big kids, and I work at the Thawna Autham Utility Authority. I've been there for a little bit. I also have side jobs. I work at the Thawna Autham Community College. I'm a language instructor for Thawna Autham 101. And I also love culture and language. I'm a pottery teacher. We're having a gathering called Haha Autham Am Uhumapa, which means that the potterers will gather. And we demonstrate at markets too. So that's another little side thing I do. What else do I do? I love to read. I love music. I love my family. I love my friends. And I think, I've spent a lot of time in this world, and I'm not a young person anymore, but I just love life. I really do. And I'm open to new things. I've MC events, and also I do stand-up comedy. And before COVID, my girlfriends and I, Adrian Chalapa and Deanna Matt, and we traveled all over the country doing stand-up shows in casinos or for tribal events. And we've been as far east as Bar Harbor, Maine. We've been up north to Canada, to Cree country, where the Cree people live. We've been northwest up to St. Paul Island in Alaska. And, of course, all around the country here, Wyoming, Michigan, Oregon, Washington, California, New Mexico, and Florida. And I grew up really humble. And I just think, that I never thought I'd have the opportunity to do the things I've done, see the places I've seen, meet the people I've met. I was even in a movie called More Than Fry Bread.
Yeah.
And that was a whole big experience. And the other day we were just talking about with a friend of mine. And this is something I haven't thought of in years. My comare, she got me somebody. They were looking, Green Valley was doing a production, and they were looking for a Native woman. So my comare says, I have a friend, she might be good for a good fit with you guys. So I ended up doing this role in the Vagina Monologues. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No.
But if you haven't, you got to check it out. It used to be a big thing, and they'd always people would do the monologues in February. But I hadn't thought of it in years, and I don't know how it came out, but it is so hilarious. So when I'm an older lady, then I can sit around and just laugh about all the crazy things I've done, and who even knew I'd be involved in stuff like that. But, I love where I live. I love the desert. I pick baidach and I make sitar, and I donate it to some of the ceremony people for our rain ceremonies. So that's a lot of stuff. But then remember, I'm an old lady, so I lived a lot of lives. So I had done a lot of things. So.
It's good. I mean, it really does kind of the array of all the things that you've done over time and throughout the years and what you're doing now. And yeah, you're right. You really have lived life to the fullest. And you're just kind of like experiencing a lot of great things, regardless of your age, and that's what's pretty mm-hmm. cool about your experience, about your story, is that regardless of, things that happen in life, you're just doing what you love to do. And then that's pretty admirable, I would say.
Thank you. Oh, and of course, I'm a retired thoka player.
Yeah.
So, I love that, it's a cultural game for our women, and it's amazing. And I just felt great about you know, my time spent doing that. And even before Toca, you know, I was one of these res girls who we played res softball and res basketball, and we went all over the place. And, you know, it's just, you know, I can't do that anymore. I'm kind of went into forced retirement from all of that stuff. I used to run half marathons, and, you know, because of I have an illness called multiple myeloma. It's a blood cancer, and it affects bones and your kidneys. So my daughter doesn't even want to risk me breaking bones. And so she her name is Summer. She's banned me from Toca. Although I throw the Ora in once in a while. but, you know, and so then, you know, what I've learned about aging too is that maybe you can't do this, but then you other opportunities become open, like making pottery. That's still a lot of work, but you know, we kind of gracefully moved into that, and that's what we're doing. And we demo at the national parks or wherever, you know, people want us to demo. And so we've taught classes in different communities, and it's really a lost art form. You know, we focus on utilitarian pottery. In fact, I'll be doing a demo where I'm going to cook in the pots, because your pots aren't just to be sitting on your shelf pretty. You should be using it. Make a stew for your family. Make some beans, mm-hmm. you know, boil some coffee in it or whatever. You know, they really do work. It's pretty amazing. And Creator gave us all the stuff we need right here on this land to produce those vessels. You know what I mean? That's what the most amazing thing about it is. And it's right here. It's everywhere. Clay's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, I better
That's
stop.
That's amazing. No worries. I mean, you know, when I first met you, and it was while playing Toca, I always appreciated just how inviting not just you, but the team was for me, because I hadn't played Toca since I was a little girl. So coming back to it as a grown woman, it was just kind of like, we'll see what happens. But just that kind of inviting atmosphere was really cool, and that I felt like I could belong to this team and really play. And it was just a really cool experience. And I'm glad that we've been friends since then. It's been many years since that time.
Yeah. And you were a fierce player too. I'm not scared of you, but you know, you had experience, and it's really, yeah. And you know, that's a Summer's team, or my daughter's team, and they're called Gilkutuk. And it's always been like different women from anywhere and everywhere. And, you know, some move on and they form their own teams, or some, you know, maybe go to another team, and that's fine. But right now they're kind of reorganizing, and they're doing really good. I went to Murchita, which is up north in Gila River, for the Toca tournament. It was so enjoyable watching them play. They didn't place, but they almost did. They almost did, but they knocked out a lot of good teams. So that was really nice to watch them. Of course, your voice gets hoarse because you're yelling and everything, but yeah.
Well, you know, with all the things that you've just shared, of all the work that you've done or things that you've been involved in and things that you just enjoy for yourself, comedy, you mentioned, is a big one. And how did you get into comedy, or did you ever, like, how did that even happen?
You know, I didn't grow up on the res. I grew up in the fields, you know, and we were very poor, but we didn't even know it. We didn't even know it, because my parents had, like, you know, seven kids, and that's a lot of people to feed. Even if our meal was just simple with, you know, a fresh pot of beans and tortillas, we were happy. But along with that, my father's people, my dad, my father came from Caborca, from Mexico. So they migrated up this way, because we do have autumn from Mexico. So him and his family were autumn, and they came to Chuigush for the Gupias, for the October 4th feast at Rabbit Falls, which is in Mexico. And I guess his sister, my aunt Julia, was friends with my mother, and my mom and dad were kind of making eyes at each other or whatever. So every year they'd see each other. And one year, my father's family parents asked my mother's parents if they could take her, because they were heading to the fields to work. And I just say that because I grew up with hardworking people. I mean, the women and my dad and my uncles, they worked really hard in the fields when it's hot, you know, during the summer, when it's really cold in the winter. But they did that because they had, you know, they had to survive on this side. And they had fun. They knew how to have fun. They went dancing, you know, they, and my mother's people, they were very awesome, but she's the oldest in her family, and her younger brothers, they went to St. John's Indian School, and they learned how to play instruments, and they became the Joaquin brothers, who are a very, they're kind of like the legends, some of the legends in Chicken Scratch or Wairo music. And of course, you come from a musical family too, so you know, it's like, it's just a tradition. So we grew up dancing. We grew up following our uncles around. And with all of that comes humor. I mean, you know, it's just natural. And for our big family, my big sister always had jokes. And she always told jokes. And she was one of those people like, oh, my God, Bee's here. Her name was Beatrice. Bee's here. We're going to have fun. You know, she just like could light up a space, and she was beautiful and she was amazing. And I was the little sister, and I just like, I had like, my hair was caveman hair. It looked like I rode in the back of a truck. It was just always a mess. I had bad skin and I was chubby, but my sister, she loved me. You know, she tried, poor thing. She tried to curl my hair and put makeup on my face. And, you know, she always just included me, and she's my first hero after my mom. But anyway, so I think, you know, and then the aunties, the way they gossiped about people, they were so funny. And so I was always around that. And so I also think too, that when my big sisters moved away, when they got married and moved away, because there's easy 10 years between us. I became the big sister at home. Because, you know, I guess we're a dysfunctional family. So I guess I was the, you know, there's different roles in dysfunctional families. And I think I was the clown. I just try to just make people laugh. I always try to make my mom laugh. I always try to keep my little sister safe. And I try to, you know, that was just me. I just wanted everybody to be safe and be okay. And so I think that was part of it. And then because my dad drank, sometimes he worked for one farm, and then he would get fired because he wouldn't go to work because he was drinking. And then we have to move to another farm. So that meant moving schools. You know, we had to go to new schools. And I used humor to like meet people, you know, and just kind of make friends, because, you know, people can be mean, especially to a chubby girl with bad skin and caveman hair. And, you know, I was probably in fourth grade, and I was like 5'7".
Wow.
So I was like tall, right, for a fourth grader. I was just awkward, and I had to I had to find my own magic somewhere. So then I don't drink or drug, but I used to. And so that's a whole other story, too, and the kind of humor you hear in the bars or whatever you're doing the best, you know. It's just, that's a whole other thing. But once I started having kids and settled down and started working and going to school, I didn't forget humor, but, you know, it wasn't the way it was, how I knew it growing up. And then one day the tribe had some big summertime event, and we went over there, and Drew LaCapa was featured as a comedian. He's a white man, Apache. He passed away maybe 3 years ago, and I heard his humor. Oh, my God. Well, he was so funny. My side hurt, and I was cracking up. And I, in my head, I thought, you know, I can do that, because I MC events, and the MC, you're just the filler. You keep things going until the next person or the next, you know, whatever section of the program. But being a comedian was a little bit different, because you're the focus now, right? But it was a good transition for me. I knew how to read people, work a crowd. And so when I saw Drew do that, I'm like, man, I can do that. And so I started doing that. In fact, Drew was a comedian. The Arizona Office of Indian Tourism was doing a fundraiser in Tucson at Pima College. And my sister-in-law bought me a ticket, because I was broke as a joke, because I'd quit my job. And, you know, I was just having, you know, it's just one of those hard times. And we had such a great time. So Drew was there, and some other comedians. And I really enjoyed the night, and it was fun. Then they had an open mic contest. And so I'm listening to the comedians, I mean, the people that are going to tell a joke. And I'm like, ush, they're not funny. Ush, that one's not funny. And so I told my sister-in-law, I said, I'm going to go tell a joke. Because one of the funniest people in the world is my brother. So I told her, I'm going to tell one of my brother's jokes. So I went over there and I got in line and I told this joke about a dog named Hussie. You know, there were two finalists. There was a Navajo girl there who told a joke. And then it became like just between her and I, and they put a hand above her and people cheered. And then they put a hand above me and people cheered. And then the lady just gave me the envelope and I won $75.
Oh, wow.
I said I was broke, so that was a lot of money. I was like, whoa, yeah. For one joke. And so that was just kind of thrilling. And then the next year, the Office of Arizona Indian Tourism contacted me and said that they were going to do the fundraiser again. And they said, since you won the joke contest, why don't you come and open the show with 10 minutes of comedy or jokes? And I'm like, okay. I mean, because me too, I'm just easy. You know, I just want to like... They asked me to do something like you called today. Oh, let's do this interview. I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just too
doesn't
easy sometimes.
Much convincing.
That's for leftover from my party days. Eh? But I said, okay. And I didn't really realize what I was getting into. You know, the first show we did, Andrew LaCapa happened to be on the bill too. He was headlining. It was in Phoenix. We did one in Phoenix and we did one in Tucson. And, I was going to be first and I was just so nervous and it turned out so good. There's nothing greater than, you know, like someone that does what I do to hear that laughter, to know that you're responsible for that laughter and for that joy and whatever the audience is feeling, because, you know, different people come for different reasons, you know, and not everybody is in a good space. And maybe somebody's going through a hard time. But for that time that they spent with me and they're laughing, you know, they put that other stuff aside. And they just enjoy and they just love it. And I used to think how funny it was. Mm-hmm. And like the more they laughed, the bolder I got. And I would go off and just be saying all these funny things. And I did tell some jokes because I think for as far as comedy goes, I don't think I'd ever make it like in a comedy club, because you know people want these one-liners and they want you to go real quick, and I'm a storyteller, you know, I just tell stories and just have fun and stuff. And one time Red Ink, there was a publication called Red Ink and it used to be in Tucson, and they asked me to come tell jokes. They said, we don't have a budget but we'll feed you. And I'm like, ush, big girl. I said, okay, if you feed me, I'll come. So I went and I just had the best time because, you know, I was still learning too. I mean, I didn't, you know, I was new to it and everything. Mm-hmm. So I went and I had a good time. It was in the backyard of, you know, whatever. And they were premiering their new publication. And I had such a great time. And I told a joke about how there's always a Navajo construction worker on all the reservations. And how when we were teenagers and we go to the dance because we were just practicing our skills, we were looking for snags and stuff like that. The other part of that story is that I got up and I, you know, shaking hands with people because I, you know, I was just thanking them for coming and stuff. And this one lady, she held my hand and she held onto it. So I stayed with her and she says, I really had fun tonight. She goes, and I want to thank you. She said, my grandson died like 2-3 weeks ago, whatever it was pretty recent. And she says, and you know, I thought I would never laugh again, but tonight I did. And I want to thank you for that. Holy cow. You know, that was worth the whole night. And the free food, of course. But you know what I mean? Sometimes it's not about the pay. It's about this other kind of stuff. And I really appreciate that because I'm one of those, I feel like when you give, whatever you give out, you're going to get back. And sometimes you get it back when you need it the most. And so I always remember that night and I always remember that lady. But yeah, it's been a really fun ride. And there's been like places where I've gone where, God, I was just like bombing or something. And then and then I start talking about my boobs and it just picks up the whole atmosphere. I don't know why that is. They're not even all that either. But anyway, I think it's been a long time since we've had Indigenous and Native and Autumn comedy in Tucson. And our other comedian is Wolf Brown and he's from Gila River. He calls me his comedy mom because I get a call from this dude one day a few years ago and he's like, I want to practice doing comedy. And, you know, do you think you can come to Gila River and do a show with me? And I'm like, yeah, because remember, I'm easy. I'm like, yeah, I'll come. So I went, and there was no money in it. You know, I just went. And I remember he used to have, remember, you know, those music stands where you have your music when you're playing the instrument, like yeah. in a band? He had his jokes on there. And I remember he did that. Now he doesn't do it. And he's gone to like the Phoenix, the funniest comedian in Arizona and competed. And he's placed, you know, second or third. I mean, he gets way up there. Mm-hmm. So see, that stuff like that would intimidate me. Cause like I, you know, I'm a storyteller. And so like we did a interview with Arizona PM, I guess that's what it's called. And they asked us stuff. And of course, Anya, I was late because I forgot. I've been busy at work. And In fact, I had Zoom on my phone and then I was still working. I put it on mute and answered my calls and helped customers. I was doing everything.
Wow.
And they asked us who our influences were or who inspiration and, you know, stuff like that. And Wolf Brown said my name. And I was like, what? And Bobby Wilson said my name. I don't know if they're just being nice. But it was still, I got a little thrill out of it, whatever, you know. So I think if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And it can be intimidating. It really can be. But I love it. I love it. And so I saw Wolf, the Murichita, because his daughter was playing Thaka. And I had just come back. I did a show up in Washington State with our women's comedy group. It's called Three Sisters Comedy. And it's the same girls, Deanna and Adrian. And we were at Silver Reef Casino in Bellingham, Washington. And I don't know if Wolf, like, he kind of says, so how did you do up there? I said, we did okay. We had about like 900 people in the audience. And he's like, yeah, did they laugh at your stuff? Like that. And I'm like, yeah, they did. I said, you know how it is. They always laugh. I said, when they don't laugh, I guess I'll quit doing it, you know. But, you know, one time he told me like really earnestly, he says, you know what? He goes, I've never seen you bomb. You always do so good. He goes, it's amazing how well you do. But then again, strict though, I like the native audiences and yeah. I think they like me.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But it's been a fun ride. It's
they
been,
love shit. And you know,
so when I got diagnosed with cancer and I needed to, when I needed to get a transplant, and I really had to look at my life and prioritize and, you know, cut things out and whatever, you know, I had to figure things out. And I told my goodie, I said, you know what? I think I could give up comedy if I had to, you know, I could not do it anymore. And he just looked at me and he says, oh, no, you can't. He goes, you love it too much. You really love it. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And even though post-COVID, we're not as busy, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm really busy. And because of my condition, my family, you know, when I get sick, I really get sick. So my family is really concerned about my schedule sometimes, and especially my son. And he'll tell me straight out, you're an old lady mom. And I told him, I said, but son, this is my normal. Going to this meeting, planning for that, you know, and helping people there and doing, he goes, I know, mom, but you have to redefine your normal. So this semester, I'm not teaching at the college for this semester, and I'm trying to focus on my physical health. So I've been working out a little bit more, walking in the desert. We got a lot of stuff coming up, and, you know, I also make jewelry and sell it. Mm-hmm. And so I've been playing with my beads and, you know, trying to create stuff and get ready for the different markets that are coming up, and then making pottery. And so I'm excited. So, yeah, life is good. And I'm really glad to be part of it. But I also understand that if I don't take care of myself, that things can get bad, you know, and it's better to be healthy than unhealthy, just, you know, even though I still have to go to, you know, my treatments twice a month. I just appreciate life, and I appreciate my family support. You know, my son takes me to my appointments, and I think, you know, I've already talked to my kids and my niece. My niece is like another close relative to me, and they're so good to me. Like when I went to Washington State, she bought a ticket and she went with me. So I think that's how my family is. Like if I go somewhere that I need to take somebody, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine too. But, and it's hard, like somebody like me to let somebody take care of me because I think I'm all cool and I'm all that and I still got it together. And I do for the most part, you know, but you know, like sometimes I'm not steady on my feet and maybe I stumbled or I did something and they come and grab my arm and they walk me down like an ox. And it's okay. It's okay. You know, and it's, and I let them help me. And I think, you know, where I'm at in my life that, you know, it's, I try to be loving to people and I let them be loving to me. And my best good friends is Kathleen Vance. And when I first got sick, I wasn't like, I didn't need treatment yet. I was just diagnosed. And she would come into my office every day and she would tell me she loved me and she would give me a morning hug. And it's like, I guess we were so urit. You know, sometimes it makes us uncomfortable when we talk about
love. Yeah, totally.
And that's just autumn, you know, autumn stuff. That's how we are. And so, so I do that to people now, like, you know, like I have my comadre I talked about, you know, she's a tough lady. Never seen her cry. I always cried to her because she was my good lady friend. And when I was, after I had my transplant in 2020, I was in the hospital. I was isolated. I had no immune system. All my hair fell out and I just was a bad patient. I didn't want to be there. And I put my poor Goody through all kinds of stuff. And he was there every day. Every day he was there with me. And he would tell me, you have friends. Call your friends. Call. So I would call my friend and we would talk and talk. Hours we would talk. And you know, as tough as she was, she would tell me, she was, I love you, T. You're such a good friend. I love you. And I always carry that because she was in an accident. Not her fault. And she was killed. Mm. And I miss her. I miss her a lot. And I think for a whole year, every time I thought about her or I talked about her, I would just cry. I'm going to get tears in my eyes. And then, you know, in autumn, we say, haichu oitahim, you know, like you kind of think about things and you process things. And I thought, I have to stop doing that because, you know, she's gone and she's okay. Wherever she is, she's okay. And look, I have all these wonderful friends here right now. And I need to appreciate them. I need to spend time with them. I need to laugh with them. I need to eat with them. I need to cook with them. I need to make pots with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I still have all this beautiful, this beauty around me and friendship and love. And I need to come back into it because I just missed, you know, my friends so much, you know. But anyway, so then I'd be kind of become like a wise lady. You know, we talk about the, and I listen to people and I can share stuff and I can tell them, believe me, it might feel bad right now, but it'll get better. It's just a temporary thing. You just got to keep your head on straight and don't be doing anything crazy. Don't be, you know, going off the deep end. I know what it's like to hurt. I mean, it's not pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we need that. We need that. We need to get different generations to talk because we're all at different parts of life and we can help each other. Even like for me being an ox and an older woman, the young people remind me there's so much new stuff in the world and, you know, they kind of pique your curiosity and it makes me want to just maybe try something new or whatever. And then at the same time, as an older person, we could give caution, especially when we see our little relatives doing crazy things, you know, we can give them caution and either they listen, they might listen or they might not. Like me, I never listened. I had to learn everything the hard way, you know, but you know, some do listen. And I just love my life right now. You know, I just have the utmost positive hope for these new kids that are coming up, you know, that they have their head on straight, they keep it on straight and they do good things for themselves, their families, their communities. And for me, who knows, they might be working at Archie Hendricks Nursing Home when I'm a patient over there. Hey.
Do you have any last comments or even shout outs that you want to share before we close out?
Oh my gosh, shout out to, I just love the Apache people. San Carlos, White Mountain, Apaches. I mean, they've just been so supportive of me since at the beginning when I just like didn't even know what I was doing. I just, you know, always will have a special place in my heart. Drew LaCapa that I mentioned was, was my inspiration, and he became my mentor, and his family is my family. And so also shout out to all the Tono Otom, woohoo! And all the native speakers, you know, Shaisi Hugi, you know, Ida Tanyo'ak, we need to keep it going and pick it up and teach it and speak it and use it and normalize it again mm-hmm. in our everyday conversation. I'm very heavy proponent of our Otom language. And I need to practice. So you see me, you say something in Otom, like, hey, Skukju. Shopua Skukju. And I'll answer you, e api Skukju. And then, you know, and so I just love that. And it's okay to love. It's okay to say it. It's okay to feel it. You know, just find that joy in every day. That's my shout out to everybody.
You are tuned in to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew, featuring Thon'otham potter, jewelry maker, and comedian Charissa Juiwa. To hear the full conversation, go to kxei.org.